Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Webb here at stuweb.com, and it is Monday, February the 15th, 2021, and it's President's Day. Now, we just did part one of a radio show, about an hour worth, and we had a good discussion with Charlene, the nurse, explaining who the Biden family is in the beginning. And Paul and I gave a pretty good description of my opinion of these presidents, and Paul has given a great description of his what he thinks of the presidents, except you left off two that you wanted to pick up on. And then I want to bring Jeff and Paul, or Joe on, Professor Joe. And I think Joe first, because I want to show the alien connection, folks. These fallen angel connections that Joe is quite aware of and has better knowledge. I mean, he's a professor at this angle of things. And that is the fallen angels, which are the aliens that the U.S. government made this 1952 to 2012 agreement extended, which now they're in control of Bluffdale, Utah, the underground base, and the other stuff that is totally in control of all communications around the world. With that said, Paul, pick up on your last couple presidents, and I want you to come back around and tail end, because you said something very important off the air that needs to be said. But go ahead.
On President's Day, there is so much material that we can cover, but what I tried to make a case for is the commonality between all presidents is they are selected and controlled. They are all guilty of sedition and treason. Two presidents that we did not talk about in the previous show, I just want to mention Lyndon Johnson. Now, one of Lyndon Johnson's most famous quotes is about geoengineering, climate engineering, stratosphere aerosol injections, atmospheric aerosol dispersions, chemical isolation, solar radiation management. What Lyndon Johnson did in one of his first speeches is he talked about how they would lay out a permanent cloud layer over anywhere they wanted, and they would create, manufacture, control the weather anywhere in the world. And Lyndon Johnson, there have been a number of, I think, interesting biographies, and Lyndon Johnson would do anything for power and would use power for whatever purpose he wanted to use it for. Now, Johnson, of course, God knows, after Kennedy said, "I see no reason that we should be in Vietnam fighting a war that the French already abandoned." But then Johnson, of course, he did as he was told, and he sent troops. And finally, by 1968, he says, "I shall not seek, nor shall I accept the nomination for president." And he didn't live too much longer after that. And Johnson had a lot of quotes that made me laugh. The guy was a piece of work, but he was a total criminal. And that's criminal with a K. And he was a total New World Order guy. Then we move into Richard Nixon.
Can I add to Johnson just for a moment a couple of things that I am aware of? He was basically controlled by the then Texas Speaker of the House, Carr, C-A-R-R, I believe is how his name was spelled. But he was one of the ones involved with Daddy Bush in killing Kennedy. Now, after Kennedy's dead, Johnson requested their top scientists. One of them was Ed Slade, my friend. And he was the one that worked at the alien base at Papoose Lake, Nevada, made toys for him. He made a special automatic weapon and for him, took some, I forgot, it was something standard, and he cut the barrel off and balanced it all out for him, but he carried it around his hand, in his right pocket. He had his suit coats made for it, and Johnson always had his right hand in his pocket, and he says, Mr. President, how do you like the feel of that and all that, and they made the special pocket for a jacket, and then they followed that afterwards, and he says, "Oh, man, Ed, you made me a real nice toy here." He says, "We got to go someplace and test it out." So they went someplace on a military base. They tested his toy. And he says, "I'm going to make sure." He said, "Can you make me a bigger clip?" He wanted a 50-round clip for this baby. He says, "Oh yeah, I can take care of that for you, sir." He took care of it. He says, "What do you need so much for?" He says, "If they come to kill me, I'm gonna spray them all." Anyway, it's a little story, a couple of things that people have told me over the years. Go ahead, Paul.
Was a New World Order guy.
Now, Nixon,
he knew exactly where the power was, and he served those that gave him his orders. And that brings me to Richard Nixon, and I'll try and be brief on Nixon because I believe Nixon was set up. The whole Watergate deal was designed to get rid of him. But Nixon came into fame as someone that had no scruples. In other words, he would do anything to acquire power, and he would do anything for power, and he was just power hungry, and he was a perfect stooge for the New World Order. Now, Nixon simultaneously, although he knew about the New World Order, he did have some proclivity towards loyalty to America, and what I'd like to conclude with Nixon on is after they got rid of him, Nixon wrote, I thought, one of the most important books that I ever read. And the name of the book is called The Real War. And it was published like in 1979 or 1980. And Nixon made the point, the real war is communism. And, you know, I didn't know whether I was reading propaganda or sincerity or what exactly I was reading. So I read it a couple times. But he made the point that we were really at the precipice at 1980. And the Soviets had infiltrated and they were going to control us. And if we didn't recognize what we were up against, the real war was capitalism versus communism. Now, maybe it was just one big propaganda book, but I felt like in reading that book that Nixon was trying to redeem himself. But anyway, I will stop with Nixon. And what I want to suggest to everyone is I think now we got four minds together. I'd like to go through all the presidents. Right now, I don't think we have a duly elected president. I think we have a stolen election. And it's by design. It is absolutely scripted that there would be a stolen election, a non-legitimate president who may or may not even be in the White House. I think it's mainly green screen. I'm not sure anyone's there. And that, of course, adds to the narrative of confusion. We've got a bunch of Trump supporters who believe that the election is stolen, and yet I would encourage anyone to be very cautious about how much faith anyone puts in Trump and the military, who they so badly want in power. I would say, hey, that probably isn't going to go well either, but I don't think it's going to happen. Anyway, back to you guys, Stu. Where do you want to pick up on now?
Okay, now, Paul, we're living in a democracy. Would you explain what they mean by a democracy before we hand the mic over to Joe and Jeff?
Yes, they have convinced us, or they have convinced most of us, that what we have in America, that's America with a K, by the way, is a democracy. That is just another canard. It's just another one of their many lies. A democracy is something that the founding fathers, they were very careful. They were very specific. And they said, we have not created a democracy. We have created a constitutional republic. And it starts with the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights, those Bill of Rights are really, they're sometimes called negative rights, because what essentially they do is they give the sovereign, the individual, the power from government. I point out the Bill of Rights and our ability to say no to the government. And what they've done over the last several hundred years is they've twisted it now so that the government has all the power. And instead of the government fearing us, what I see and what I'm experiencing is we've got a bunch of debt slaves, and they think the people behind the curtain and the people who they see care about them. and they're willing to wear masks, and they're willing to get vaccinated, and they're willing to go along to get along and tell on their neighbor, and because somehow they think there's a democracy. And what we really have is a fake democracy that's really about dividing everyone. And so I use the example of a triangle. At the very top of the triangle, of course, the pyramid triangle, that's them. That's at the very top are the people behind the curtain that we don't see. And then there's the political people that we do see and the presidents and so forth. But what they do is they pit us at the bottom of the triangle against each other, the corporation against the worker, me against my neighbor. See, we always think that we're fighting, we're never fighting the real enemy when we're fighting each other. But that's what a democracy does. It's mob rule, and it pits one side against the other, and you forget about who's controlling things behind the curtain or at the top. So now what I want to just indicate is right now we don't have a constitution, in my opinion, nor do we have a legitimately selected president. And so I'll stop now with that, because we can go deeper there later. But to you, Joffrey and Joel, Stu and I have had our chance to say a lot. We'd like to hear from you. President's Day. What say
Joe,
you about President Day, fellas?
Joe, why don't you start, and here's what I'd like for you to add besides your thoughts, but I want you to explain to everybody the alien connection into Adolf Hitler at some point. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, let's kind of keep it on to what we're talking about right now, and then I'll conclude it with what I found through the alien connection and your interviews with Ed Slade. In other readings, the Ninth Amendment of the Constitution guarantees a republic. And a republic is based upon where the minority has a say in the process. It's called the Electoral College. Without the Electoral College, no republic. So what we have now, because of chicanery, particularly at the voter level and the manipulation of algorithms, we do not have a true count of the vote. And so that now has created a sense of where we, is this guy in office or is he not in office? Is it green screen or is it something else? What is going on? So we kind of want to keep that in mind, that our corruption of the entire process of a republic has been undermined by what I would call just high tech. They can change a vote. And all of this stuff, of we're going to go back and count the vote. No, you have to go count and see if the vote is legitimate. Is that a citizen of the, really, it should be States United, not United States with capitals. So what does that mean? That means probably going all the way back, and particularly with the 13th Amendment, which is bringing about the income tax, that created a system by which the economy could be what's a good word for it? Could be marginalized. Money is supposed to be 1/35th of an ounce of gold. It's in United States code. If you take out a dollar bill, it says debt note. It does not say money. And what happens is that the government gives paper and ink to the Federal Reserve System. They print it, then lend it back to the United States government and charge them interest. So what they get concerned about is the debt, making sure that the federal government pays on the debt. And the way that it's done is through the IRS, which is a private company, just like the Federal Reserve. It is not a federal agency. So when you go to pay your income tax, you are paying the interest on the debt to the Federal Reserve. If you make out your check, it is not signed off to the Department of Treasury. It's signed off to the IRS, which is a private company. And in the Article 1, Section 9, fourth full paragraph, my words, I'm having to make it so that you can understand it. It says you cannot tax income. That's in simple words, you cannot tax income. That's what Jesus's parents were doing when they went to pay the tax. It was an income tax, and all of our founding fathers warned against income tax because it makes you a slave. So that is the system of why we have a problem, and that morphs over into what we call the United States government is a corporation now. It's called Washington, D.C. Incorporated. It was passed in 1875. You are not a citizen of the States United. You are a citizen of the United States. And that means you are a citizen of the corporation. And that's why when the Congress and Senate passes law, they don't pass law, they pass resolutions. Now, before World War II, the income tax was voluntary. After World War II, it became permanent. Now, we have found that because of Article 1, Section 9, fourth full paragraph, that you are not to tax income, we now know that the way they got away with it is when you go to work, you sign that W-2 form, and that is a contract between you and the Federal Reserve System and the IRS system. And that is how we lost our freedom. So if you go into a tax court, you will see if they have a flag. It's fringed. It's called admiralty law. They make statutes, not law. Law is made by Congress, nobody else. And that's how we got hoodwinked with all the different presidents that have come down to the present day. And that is why, essentially, Kennedy was assassinated, because they were going to make it into a government money. They were going to back it by silver. And that is why Kennedy was assassinated. Essentially, there are other reasons too. So that'll give you an idea of where we are on this President's Day. We are not a democracy. Our founding fathers, the Ninth Amendment, said specifically, we are a republic. They abhorred a democracy. They listed it as two sheep in wool, or two wolves in sheep's clothing, and a sheep voting on what we're going to have for dinner.
Oh, Joe, I want to add one thing about you.
Don't add.
$2 bills and Kennedy.
$2
bills and Kennedy.
I don't want to be. We can come back to that in a minute. So the idea is that we have lost this really in two places. One, in about 1839, when the war went over between Andrew Jackson and the Federal Reserve people, because he would not charter the Federal Reserve System. So let's go forward now and connect that up to 1875 and the corporate law, and that ended it right there. And finally, the 13th Amendment was not properly ratified. The states did not vote on it. So that's why they had to make the Federal Reserve System into a voluntary system. Now that, forward now to what happened with Kennedy, and he was the president that was going to try to turn things around. That is the best definition that I could give for everybody to what we call President's Day and sedition, at the absolutely a sedition. Now to what Stu requested concerning the alien connection. The man that made the final connection is a guy by the name of Stu Ed Slade. He was a Area 51 scientist. Area 51 should be really called Area 52, Groom Lake and Papoose Lake. And you can get on Google Maps, they'll let you see it. You can go, just put in Google Maps, Groom Lake, Papoose Lake, and you'll see Area 51. So what he said was, is that there was a connection between the aliens and our government at Area 51. And who were the aliens? And Ed Slade said, and he was specifically asked that question, they are the fallen angel aliens of Genesis. The sons of God looked upon the daughters of men and lusted. Now, Ed went on to say that the aliens also made connection with the Germans at Peramunda under General Cromler. And General Cromler conducted all the secret operations at Peramunda. They were literally given UFOs. They taught them to fly it. They did not have to back engineer it to get it done. But it also includes the alien connection with the Vril Society, which had nothing to do with the Nazis or the what we call the fallen angel alien. These were the Vril Society. And the person that commented on this was a guy by the name of Clark McClendon, who was a big, high-ranking the NASA program. He was head of that, sections of that. Clark McClendon explained that the Vril Society was from a group of stars called Aldebaran. Now, these are the words of Clark McClendon, and which was told to him by Cromler, Devis, and Von Braun. So there you have a little bit of the connection. Now that's two groups. There was one more group that was working on anti-gravity machines, and those were the ones that invented what we call the Nazi Bell. That is the connection then between the Nazis and the fallen angel aliens, which enticed them to move to the Antarctica, which was called Schwabenland. And it was a big underground environment which was could sustain life. And they invited the certain members of the Nazi population to go down there. And approximately 2 million moved down there under the leadership of General Cromwell. So that is the one group that Admiral Byrd met and got into a fight with, and then returned back to the United States to give his story privately to the President of the United States. And there you have it in a sound bite. In other words, they're still down there. And that's why that is why we have a group for the last 2 years. Even Senator Kerry went down there to the Antarctica. Now, there's a side story that is very interesting to this, in that a group of Muslims around the in Mecca, around its holy shrine, were digging and they came across an ark, and they were killed because they didn't know what it was. It was just like the ark that Moses made. And that ark had its power with certain leadership among the Muslim community at Mecca called Putin. Putin sent a fleet. They picked up the ark and they took it down to the Antarctica, where they built a small chapel. And to this day, there is one priest that stands by that ark. Now, why was that ark planted there? Was that to keep in line the fallen angel Alien, which has a huge base, which William Tompkins said is as big as the state of California? Is that why that ark is there? So that's a little bit of a side note to the Alien connection and the Nazis. Go ahead, Stu. There you go.
Well, Joel, I'd like to ask a couple questions. You answered a couple of my questions, but I have a couple more. So there were at least 2 million Germans that went to Schwabenland, and they engaged Admiral Byrd, and High Jump became High Tail. Now, what happened to those 2 million Germans? Did they procreate? Are there many more Aryan German people living in Schwabenland? And then my second question is, so you got Hitler, of course, not dying in a bunker, and all of his cronies, of course, that go through the rat lines and end up in South America, and they were everywhere from Brazil to Argentina to Paraguay and beyond.
Spain was the big place. They were mainly at the special Nazi layer that protected him and himself. He was in Spain.
What I'm trying to figure out is, you got 2 million Germans in Schwabenland, but Hitler and all the higher ups in the Nazi regime, they didn't choose to relocate to Schwabenland. Instead, they chose South America. Did that 2 million colony unravel in Schwabenland? Did they get kicked out? And then those 2 million move into Argentina and Brazil and Paraguay and Chile and everywhere else in South America. What happened to those 2 million that originally were in Schwabenland that fought Hightail, Admiral Byrd?
There are people who have been abducted, who faced the reptilian and the gray, particularly the grays, tall and short, and among those grays would be blondes, blue-eyed people, which they seem to be German. There are many people who have been abducted and seen these Aryan-type individuals. Maybe that is the outcome of Schwabenland. Nobody really knows. But I would simply say that is a possibility. Because, remember, according to even Bill Tompkin, the aliens, the fallen angel aliens and the grays, gave you anti-gravity machines. They didn't have to back engineer, and they taught them how to fly. And there were even some people who say, according to William Tompkins, they landed on Mars.
Now, if I may add some things here. Admiral Byrd, who testified for the Congress in secret after he chased the Nazis, and not their submarines, but their ships, into the South Pole, folks. Now, he testified that he went in and he lost over 2,000 men and ships. He came out with two ships, but he fought flying saucers that the Nazis had built, that Adolf Hitler built, because of the connection with the fallen angels. Again, technology. John Lear, my friend, a test pilot at 51, also a CI pilot, doesn't speak too much anymore because he's got a lot of problems they're trying to create for him. And his father owned Lear Jets, and I explained this in the first hour, and he sold them. And he took the contract, the 1952 to 2012 alien agreement the U.S. government was forced into doing with Eisenhower. And Eisenhower's granddaughter speaks out that, yes, he was forced to do it. Okay. That agreement, John Lear's father built in secret 150 saucers, which are parked in several bases around the U.S. One of them is north of Las Vegas. I saw myself one night coming from Nevada or Utah down through into just about 30 miles south of the border there of Utah and Nevada is where the base is, because I saw a couple of them glowing coming in. I also saw with BBC, British Broadcasting, when I was doing a speech at Area 51, it's a, they call it, it's a yearly thing, and it's the little alien restaurant which is filmed in the movie that was developed in the 90s called, it was where the Americans fought the aliens. What was the name of that movie, Paul, Joe? Independence Day, July the 4th. Yes. July the 4th. Okay, so it's in that movie, the little alien restaurant. The point is, it's not at that test site. It's over Papoose Lake, Nevada. So we go up the highway there from where the little alien restaurant is. It's now called the Extraterrestrial Highway since the movie they renamed it. And Joe owned this little restaurant and had these events. He had these hangars. People could listen to, you know, there'd be 500,000 people showing up there. Anyway, so it was a way to get some of the information out. Actually, I met there someone that was involved in the Montauk Project, which he's dead, and his wife was supporting him, and their kids were grown. Now, in secret, he shared things with me, the OG meter, OG meter, which is in the book, The Montauk Project. It's what puts him through space-time that we have. There's other things I could go into, but Admiral Byrd went in the South Pole, knocking out and being shot by saucers from the Nazis, lost 2,000 men, then later, after doing it in secret, he writes his book, The Hollow Earth. Now, Otis Johnson super spook showed me a document in his file drawer that showed the two Air Force jets under Operation Blue Book flew in the North Pole chasing two saucers, alien saucers. And they flew inside, their gauges went nuts, but they followed in, and it was a hollow hole of water pouring in the hole. They went into a huge river. They said it was like the Garden of Eden, they could imagine. And they're flying, chasing these saucers. They're flying along, and they're saying, hey, we can't see our fuel. We're not going to fly too much longer. So they turn around. There's a sun inside on the report. A sun inside the hollow earth, folks. Now, does this run from the North Pole to the South Pole? I assume it does. Now, Joe touched on something, and I'll touch on it right here and now. Our Western White House, Western Capitol, I saw the blueprints because of a CIA buddy of mine. Became a friend, short-lived friendship. They took a ball-peen hammer and beat his spine and cracked two of his vertebrae because he opened his mouth and showed me the drawings, because Daddy Bush was trying to steal from him because he was in the control box for the CIA corporation that controlled what's called the Argo Tunnel in behind Denver, Colorado. And he was the front guy, him and a couple other people, and Daddy Bush wanted to take it over from him, threatened to kill him. So a sheriff came to me that was his friend and introduced me, and they showed me the drawings. It goes to the hollow earth. They fly what's called the Blue Light Special, the Aurora airplane in, and you can see it from Center, Colorado, I think it's called. And it's the growing fields of the upper desert, they call it. It's a huge crop that comes out of Colorado. And it's on the south side, and it's a beautiful view on the north side. When you get right up there to the north side of this flatland, you can see the back of Pikes Peak. You can see all these mountains. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's one of the best views. But you're in behind Colorado Springs at that point, where NORAD headquarters was. You know, the big bunker everybody's seen on TV and all the other stuff. That's the old one. It gets a lot of water. But in behind there was all upper desert. And there's sand in there. There's all kinds of stuff. Matter of fact, the guy that runs the Nabari now for Milman as the front loan guy, some loan company runs it out of there. Schultz built a glass pyramid up in that corner. Why is that? That's where the blue light special flies, because I did a speech down there for a bunch of people that were patriots and so forth. Matter of fact, the sheriff was the same one who arranged the meeting that introduced me to this other guy without mentioning his name. Now that blue light special, we're out there barbecuing. I'm talking to all the different people, and we're barbecuing and having a beer and everything, and I'm going to hang out at the house. I'm not driving any place. And they say, oh, it's about 9 o'clock. It starts happening or whatever it was, and all of a sudden, here it comes. Skip, skip, skip across the sky. Now, I had Jim Rothstein on with me, and he was the one to expose the finders and the kids and the CI trafficking and kids and all the other shit years ago, and they tried to smash him. They tried to kill him, and he's the mayor of Cloud, Minnesota now. I've had him on the show a few times. In one of those last interviews, he spoke of Michael Reconnaschutel and things that he was involved with in that desert out there west of Paul, out in Arizona or California, wherever it's at. Now, that's another base. But here was the point that I was trying to make, and I'm losing thought because I'm going all over the board with this. You got the Hollow Earth on the north side. You got the Hollow Earth on the south side. We're sitting out here looking at a blue light special flying into the Argo Tunnel, folks. Behind Pike's Peak, 9 o'clock center. I saw it two nights in a row. I was up there. I said, oh, my God. Jim Rothstein said they fly at 36,000 miles per hour. I was told they fly at 39,000 miles per hour, and that's our latest toys. And here's an example. When I lived in Las Vegas, it was around 2001 or 2002. I was one of the first Aurora that was flying because I met a pilot out there. And someone that was flying into Area 51 testing the Aurora, they had to put it on TV as a missile went wild. A cruise missile test coming into Nevada to hit some place out there, went wicked, and then it finally got on course. That was because the pilot passed out, folks, and it automatically brainchild the machine that shapeshifts into a longer form with mu metal tied up to what Ed Slade had talked about that they developed and stuff when he was at the alien base there. The shapeshifting metal, mu metal, that they've made the robotoids out of. They made the Aurora airplane out of also. But the pilots pass out because of the speed. It automatically runs itself to the course it's going. Now, that flies into the hole of the Argo Tunnel. The Argo Tunnel is the Western White House that Dick Cheney was always missing in action during his vice presidency. He was at the Adams Mart Hotel at DTC, Denver Tech Center. Now, the Adams Mart was owned by Milman, but they built a presidential suite in it, and they built a floor below it. They get into the elevator, come from the presidential suite, it all goes to the second floor, and you have to take another elevator to the first floor to kind of disguise it. But if you're on that second elevator and you're in the presidential suite, you open up as the door closes, the phone, and you punch in a code, and it drops you down to a subfloor, which goes into the Argo Tunnel, which is just... these boring machines that the U.S. Air Force has done is boarded all over, and it interconnects with all of Denver, period, and the Hollow Earth. They did the Denver airport with it, did Secret Underground. I expose that. There's a video of the guy that built it, and that was a FEMA base. Capture your ass, haul you away, and feed you to the aliens someplace. I could tell you all kinds of stories, horror stories. If you take the Aspen Institute, what are they, folks? What is it, British? Across the way is a laboratory, a U.S. government lab. I forgot the name of it. They were hauling children up there. Guess who the people running the place are? All friggin' clones of Nazis and others, Bush types, others, that have been cloned in Hope, Arkansas, run that. And they're constantly bringing kids in there that are disappearing. I asked the question, what the hell is going on? Now, I can tell you, Colorado is a hot spot. And they do the summer winter solstice, the 12 disciples of Satan do. Because I spoke in the previous show about Otis getting an order signed for Casey, why Daddy Bush was VP, and he witnessed it. Now, this show, I'm trying to define, or trying to, I think we're all trying to lay out about how our government has been taken over by aliens. And here's what Super Spook Otis Johnson and his friends with the NSA would tell me at the barbecue at Otis's house on occasion I was at, by his swimming pool and everybody having a good time and girls there and a whole bit, a few family members. There are 12 disciples of Satan, and here's the names I remember from everybody. Your ex-father-in-law, Leonard Millman. Now it's Larry Mizell. It jumps from one to another, the one that they are going to inhabit. As Otis said, whatever lived in Leonard Millman lived for thousands of years before it inhabited him. Now it lives in Larry Mizell is where it went, because he was the one that was chosen to control the $100 trillion your ex-father-in-law controlled. Now, Daddy Bush controls a lot more money than that. And Millman was one of the richest when he died. But the fallen angels is the 12 disciples of Satan in control of the United States economy currently. It's Daddy Bush, if he's still alive, rumors he's in Paraguay, may not be if it isn't. I was told by a couple of these guys who it was going to be, a Fort Worth attorney, I forgot his name, that was designed to be inhabited by this fallen angel that lived in Daddy Bush. Now, Millman, Daddy Bush, you got Henry Kissinger, you have Anwar Ben Sharia, the head rabbi in Israel, controlling Bibi Netanyahu. You have Pope Benedict, that had to resign because he was in trouble for screwing kids over in Germany, had arrest warrants, and had to resign his Popemon position. And then you have William Grace of Grace and Company. You got Paul Wahlberg. You have David Rockefeller, Meyer Rothschild, and I believe they had sons that took over for him. I know that William Grace did, inhabited his son. And I'm trying to think who I'm missing here in the equation. Oh, Patrick Wu of China. Or not Patrick Wu. Yeah, Patrick Wu, and he spells it two different ways, and he likes to live in Dallas, Texas, and buy a lot of stuff down there and build Texas. Those are the 12 disciples of Satan, and they're called the Council of 13. And the 13th one to show up when they do these human sacrifices is the devil himself, and advises them and tells them what to do. And they're fallen angel-possessed human beings. They have to have a human in order to have control over the human race, folks. I'm going to repeat this. They have to have humans in order to control the human race. They got to have these evil human beings willing to sell their soul to the devil so he can come in and kill off the rest of the human race is what it all comes down to and mounts to. Period. This is what we are up against. And the technology, being able to light people up with their cell phones and kill them, being able to shoot you in secret from West Star satellites at E-Systems, Daddy Bush's Raytheon Corporation, the CIA shadow government within the government, that Jeb Bush and Ollie North all set up with FEMA and everything else to control the masses, and they shoot 10 million people with this satellite every night around the planet while you're asleep, usually in the middle of the night. That's when I get mine. And Otis Johnson looked because he had the capabilities because he was in the NSA. And he was a think tank at the NSA that kept everybody safe at night and day, both his shift, from his own home. And he was a super spook. Punch in my website, his name, and you'll see they had the Glomar Explorer. He lifted a nuclear submarine, a Russian submarine, one of his first big operations in 1972 with the Hughes Glomar Explorer. Hughes was a defense contractor, still is. He raised that, got the nuclear codes out of it we needed of a sunken Russian ship. Why, they sat there and watched all the subs around them, watching what they were doing. And it was a big fraud of looking like they were sucking minerals off the bottom of the ocean floor was the cover story in the national news. That was his first big operation. Another one, he went in when the Shah was in power and took pictures for the NSA as a farmer from Nebraska. And I saw a picture of it sitting or hanging on his mother's dining room wall, framed, of him the farmer. That was his cover. And then he breaks away from the farmers that in his co-op deal in Moscow. He disappears and he goes to Siberia and takes pictures of this new nuclear submarine base that they needed on the ground because they had satellites covering it and the U.S. couldn't see it. So he was the guinea pig and he ran for 6 days and six nights, as he put it, stole cars, he stole bicycles, he stole people's clothes off their lines to change clothes, his identity, while he brought the camera back. And he was extracted out of the northern part of Iran and brought back to America, and he had his first heart attack at 52 years of age. He said, Bluffdale, Utah controls all your electronics, folks. It's hooked up with Jerusalem, Israel, Daddy Bush, the New World Order, Satan. They can hear everything you say, see every text. They can see you through your phone, through your television. They're now giving you super electronics with Wi-Fi and 5G, and that's what's killing a lot of people that have a problem. Lack of vitamin D, zinc, magnesium, potassium, vitamin D. Oregano is good at this. Oil of oregano is good at this point. But we got so much electronics and a glass of apple juice every day because electronics in our atmosphere and chemtrails, of which they're lighting our lungs up with, making us to be able to be little slaves and robots for them. And now they got the mark of the beast with the chip in it called the vaccination for the coronavirus standing in front of us, which in my opinion is possible Revelations 13. He gets rid of two-thirds of mankind. All I know is that's my opinion of what the hell is going on. Now, Jeff, I want your opinion.
you guys have been covered the world and then some. You know, covering the presidents, I think exceptional. I think you guys did great on that. I tend to say, okay, what really is the job of the role of the president? Anyway, is he a foreign affairs expert? Is he an economist? Are the president the civil rights champion? You know, what do they really do? What do we expect from them? And what expectations are put on a president that are just unrealistic, you know? So I guess I want to hear your first show because I didn't catch all of that. But great, the explanation of where we've come from in this presidential election process to where we are today and how much has it changed, I guess I would have to say, from what the intentions were and what we thought we had and, you know, all the way from, well, I guess currently to today, but Joel talking about the debt, you know, does debt even matter? Are we at a point where, you know, the more that we can create deficits, the greater the paycheck is for those who create the debt? So the Federal Reserve, certainly, is there really an interest, or is there really not an interest in having wars? Are wars an economic boom? And in many respects, they really are. There's a terrible cost of life, obviously, but it's, like they say, it's big business. So, you know, from presidents to debt to Germany in Antarctica, and Germany apparently was even in Antarctica before we even had the war. I mean, they were setting up a base there in Antarctica prior to the war. So that whole connection with what influenced them to go there and why. And I recall Byrd saying that he covered part of the territory where it looked like he looked down and what he was seeing he couldn't believe. He saw green grass, he saw open water lakes, freshwater lakes,
not frozen over. There's something truly odd and unusual. You can't even, there's a flyover zone in Antarctica. You can't even fly over it. So there's so many things, I guess you guys kind of hit on. We could dive, take a deeper dive into any one of those subjects at a future date, because I think we'd probably run up against time-wise, but that's where you, where we're at, I guess. But lots of information. Extremely interesting. I'd like to hear more about Operation High Jump, what we think influenced Germany to want to go there in the first place, and what did they discover. And then we get our butt kicked by UFOs that we can't identify, but you know, maybe that was the Germans getting the technology from demonic life force, and we got our butt kicked. So anyway, that whole story got covered up, and I think it was the Chilean press, they kind of covered it, but apparently it never made its way back over here to the U.S. But anyway, I like the whirlwind tour we got. There's a lot in there we can go a lot deeper on, and I guess that's my summarization of what I heard today.
I'd just like to add that if there's any show that anyone should pass along, at least from my perspective, I think The Last Hour, even though it's President's Day, and, you know, I'm trying to make a point that we don't have a legitimate president or constitution anymore, I think that we went into significant detail and some really compelling narratives about where we are and how we are today because of what's happened over the last century. Boy, this would be a show that anybody that listens to it, you're probably going to have your jaw on the table or on the ground and pick it up a few times, because I believe in everything I've heard is, you know, I think it's accurate and I think it's amazing, and I don't think you're going to hear it anywhere else. And I would just encourage anyone that listens, if you got anyone that has some questions about where we are right now. And I would just like to conclude with a conjecture, surmising something, and that is, there is a possibility, I think, of either a real alien invasion or a fake alien invasion. And right now, I'm not altogether sure that I am what it's going to look like, but some call it the arrival, and a lot of movies have been made with that theme. And the ultimate message from Pope Jorge Bergoglio, others might call him Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, essentially has been talking since about 2015, maybe even sooner, but I've only got it from 2015, saying that we can expect an alien arrival. And initially he was saying that we would baptize them, but he's since changed his narrative, and the narrative is now they created us. And so I think we can pick it up from did they create us? Where does all this nonsense come from? And what essentially should we be doing here in the next 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? And I think we're up against our time limit, so I'm going to sign off and say thank you guys. Amazing.
Before you sign off, I want to ask, Paul, real quick, I got a drawing up on my website. I think it's on the front page, and it shows a picture of Popeyman, I call him, the Pope. And it shows the saucer landing in the Vatican, and it shows the devil's face above all the saucers that are coming down. And it says, zap me up, and everybody's giving the evil, you know, two-finger horn look, sticking up. But a friend of mine in Las Vegas was an artist, and he drew that for me, a picture of Popeyman. The Great Rapture. The Great Rapture, folks. The alien invasion. That was in 2002 he made that for me. So it fits in with what everybody's talking about now. Joe, give me your last thoughts, would you please?
That's it right there, everything I said, that's it.
Okay, Jeff, you have any last thoughts?
No, I would conclude, I think that was a great show.
Okay, one of the three of you want to take us to prayer and end this show? Paul, you want
Jeffrey,
to take it?
You want me to, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Or you want to?
Whichever.
Go ahead, Paul.
All right. Well, Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to have the chance to speak our truth, and we ask that you put a hedge of protection over all of us, because what we've talked about, what we've said is explosive, and what we've done is we've exposed everything from Genesis 6 to present day. And so in addition to a hedge of protection over us, also over our listeners, and beyond that, we ask for strength, we ask for wisdom, and we ask for courage. And then it puts us back into who we are in relationship with you. And you have the ability to fellowship, relate with us, and you created us in your image from dust. And we owe our lives to you. We were created by you to serve you. And we ask in Jesus' name, by the stripes, by the blood of Jesus, that you bless us as we continue forward. You show us what you need us to do. We follow your ways, and that all listeners be included in everything that I've asked for. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Jeff. Everybody have a good day.
Take care.
Take care.